Sugar, dedicated to Rush Limbaugh. Get well soon, Porky. I can't wait to torment you some more. Welcome to Show 17. Boy, we got a big show for you today. We got this and that, and it's going to be cool. But as is the norm, we need to start out with the checklist. We need to run through it, be sure we got what we need. Let me see. First thing on the checklist. Oh, yeah, the Chinaco Añejo. Oh, so good. I can't stand it. Okay, lots to do. Let's just jump right into it. What do we got?
From Studio 8H in Rockefeller Center, it's Weekend Update with Jimmy Fallon and Tina Fey.
Hi, I'm Tina Fey.
And Jimmy Fallon. Here are tonight's top stories. Earlier in the week, Arnold Schwarzenegger outlined his plan for the first 100 days of his administration. Actually, it's only a plan for the first 20 days, but he's going to do 5 reps. Schwarzenegger also acknowledged a Los Angeles Times article documenting his groping of women on movie sets, saying that although some information was inaccurate, quote, whenever there is smoke, there is fire, adding, and whenever there's fire, I'm squeezing titties. I love to squeeze titties.
Democratic presidential candidate Wesley Clark has started giving out Clark bars as souvenirs at his rallies. Not to be outdone, candidate Al Sharpton continues to eat and be nutrageous.
America Online launched a new service this week called AOL Latino, aimed at Spanish-speaking households. AOL Latino is just like regular AOL, except when you log on, it says, you got mail, papi.
Rush Limbaugh resigned from his job on ESPN's Sunday NFL Countdown after racially charged remarks about Philadelphia Eagles quarterback Donovan McNabb, saying that McNabb was given too much credit for his performance because he is black. Finally, someone has the guts to say what the liberal media doesn't want you to know. Black people are not good at sports.
Well, this is a tough week for Rush Limbaugh. He's also under investigation for allegedly purchasing thousands of addictive painkillers from a black market drug ring.
Here to comment on all this is Rush Limbaugh.
Thank you. Thank you, Tina. Folks, it's a pleasure to be here. I'd first like to say that my remarks about Donovan McNabb were directed at the media and were not racially motivated. I am not a racist. 3 of my on-air colleagues were blacks. Not just regular blacks, but extremely dark blacks.
Okay, but now what about the painkillers? 5,000 painkillers? Why did you need so many pain pills?
Oh, to say that OxyContin or pain pills is a gross mischaracterization. The typical left-wing feminazi propaganda. I assure you I am perfectly healthy. I take OxyContin to trip my balls off.
Sounds like you don't have any regrets.
Well, I do have one regret. The timing. If this drug thing sticks, I could go to jail, and I just pissed off a lot of black guys. Yeah. Oh, don't clap. It's very dangerous. But it doesn't bother me, because people can say whatever they want. You know, you can't hurt Rush Limbaugh. Seriously. You can't hurt me. I have so much Demerol coursing through my veins that I can't feel a thing. Look at this. Nothing at all.
Okay, Rush Limbaugh, everybody.
I just can't get over how many of these fundamental Christians, these religio frauds, they just love Rush more than ever. The idea that he's been illegally abusing heroin for the last, 6 years? That's okay. Rush Limbaugh, a man, a way of life, is how he sells himself. A way of life, the heroin junkie who says he's a role model that you can put your husband in a Motel 6 with and not have to worry about it. Well, gee, I don't know. Who wants her husband to spend the night with Rush in a Motel 6 shooting heroin? That just makes no sense. It just proves again and again, it's not about morals or ethics. It's about they want their side to win. They hate the blacks and they want a tax cut. Oh, and they hate the gays too. And they pretend. They hide behind God. Oh, I don't know how you Christians can stand that. I don't even care because I don't have a God. But if you had a God and you saw these bastards hiding behind God, using him as an excuse for their racism, their homophobia, and their steal money from the poor to give to the rich bullshit ideas, how can you stand that? Speaking of bullshit ideas, we had a big anniversary last week. Of course, it was just met with a whisper in the media because it was only 240 dead Marines, so that's just a whisper. Now, the 18 that we lost in Somalia, we got to do the big movie. We got to bring it up weekly. We got to blame it on Clinton constantly. It's a never-ending merry-go-round of circle jerk-ism because the 240 don't matter anywhere near what the 18 matter because Reagan got those men killed. He sent them there. They died because of his personal stupidity. The Joint Chiefs wanted those Marines housed on the ships offshore where they could be protected, but Reagan said, no, the symbolism would be big, so we're going to put them in a hotel. So any hand job with a pickup full of explosives can cause 240 families extreme grief. Here's how CNN put it. As far as I know, it was only on once. They mentioned it for a couple of minutes on the 20th anniversary.
Grim as the news was, it was in part overshadowed by the U.S. invasion of Grenada 2 days later to overthrow a hard left pro-Cuban government.
Let us also remember this is where the Wag the Dog movie came from. Reagan had one of the biggest public relations debacles in all of history on his hands. His personal bungling got 240 men murdered, and they had to do something. They could not let that story stay on the headlines. They could not have any kind of focus put on that. So he launched an invasion 2 days later. Oh, I'm sure Grenada was the real hot spot. Yeah, that's where the whole communist thing turned around when Reagan stopped him in Grenada, the Isle of Nutmeg. Yeah, that was really brave on Reagan's part. What is it, about a third of the size of Rhode Island? And to get the Lebanon massacre that he allowed off the front pages, Reagan ordered an invasion of a country that didn't need invading. And if it did, it didn't need invading that day. They just had to do it. Don't you just love your tax dollars at work? And the whore press following right along. Forget those 240 brave dead men. Let's talk about the Island of Nutmeg and how important it was we had to invade that son of a bitch.
I know that things don't look bright.
And when President Reagan ordered the Marines to leave Lebanon in January 1984, not many Americans paid attention.
Well, of course they weren't paying attention because Reagan controlled the press back then like the Bushes controlled the press right now. They had it covered up by their willing accomplices in the GOP media. No focus was ever put on Reagan's crimes or Bush's crimes. It was all overlooked. Oh, and another thing. CNN chose not to include this, but this is where the extremely famous Reagan quote came from when the young widow said, Mr. President, why didn't you have any concrete barriers in front of that hotel? Why didn't you take any kind of precautions to protect those brave men? You know, they died in their sleep. This happened, I don't know, 2 o'clock, 6 o'clock in the morning, something. These guys all went to sleep trusting their commander-in-chief to protect them when they're in harm's way. So this widow asked Reagan, why the hell weren't there some concrete barricades? Or hell, you could have dug a goddamn ditch. You could have had one bulldozer could have dug a ditch out there with a 1,000-year-old little drawbridge on there. Because pickup trucks can't fly, Mr. President. If you'd only dug a ditch or if you'd put up some of those concrete pylons, all those men would be alive to this day. But no, why didn't you do that, Mr. President? And Reagan looked her in the eye and said, well, it's just like when you order the kitchen cabinets and they don't come in on time. That son of a bitch. Can you believe he reduced the lives of those 240 dead Marines to fucking kitchen cabinets?
But by some accounts, others did pay attention. That terrorist act of 20 years ago may have helped convince some of America's adversaries that the United States, for all of its might, was vulnerable, that heavy losses could be inflicted upon it at a relatively low price. After all the reasoning went,
The U.S. had lost the war in Vietnam, not because it was militarily weak, but because it did not have the political will to bear the costs. And over the years, these adversaries seemed to take heart from what they saw as American weakness, from what the U.S. did not do when it left Saddam Hussein in power after the first Gulf War, when it pulled troops out of Somalia in 1993 after 18 Americans were killed, the Black Hawk Down incident, when it failed to strike hard after the 1996 Khobar Towers bombing, or the 1998 embassy bombings in Africa that killed 19 Americans, or the attack in 2000 on the USS Cole that left 17 dead. That history may have been what Osama bin Laden had in mind when he said, 3 months after 9/11, when people see a strong horse and a weak horse, by nature they were like the strong horse.
Here we go again. This is Jeff Greenfield, CNN's Clinton-hating monkey, deciding this is all Clinton's fault. You know, the Beirut massacre happened in 1983. Clinton was a full 10 years from coming in office, but no, this is Clinton's fault. They learned this lesson under Reagan in 83, that if you blow up a couple of hundred Marines, they'll turn tail and run. This is the Reagan doctrine that has caused this trouble. Reagan laid the groundwork for all this 9/11 terrorism. This monkey Greenfield's trying to blame this on Clinton about, you know, the Cole got bombed. Well, hey, guess what? The Cole's a warship. And the embassies that got bombed, how is Bill Clinton going to personally guarantee every embassy in, what, 192 countries? What kind of bullshit is that? But Reagan intentionally put those men on land. We've never had a loss until 9/11 as big as these 240 Marines. So Reagan is the guy that taught them that if you kill enough of our Marines, we'll turn tail and run. This is the Reagan doctrine. Don't let them blame it on Clinton. This is Reagan's doing.
Indeed, one of the principal arguments made for American military action in Afghanistan and in Iraq was that the U.S. had to prove by direct action that America was not a weak horse, that Al-Qaeda and its allies were misreading America's resolve. If that's true, that Beirut bombing of 20 years ago may have been where that miscalculation began.
Get it? It may have begun there. Even though it was 10 years before Clinton, we're going to go ahead and put a maybe on Reagan's screw-up. He says this is what the Pentagon used and the president used as rationale for going in hard, that we have to clean up Reagan's mistake. Since Reagan sent them the message that we are too afraid to fight, we've got to prove that we're not. Well, hey, George, I got an idea for you. Why don't you go after bin Laden and Al-Qaeda? Why did you go after settle old scores with Saddam so you could steal that oil? If you would have gone after the people who harmed us on 9/11, everybody would be with you. The world would be with you. The Democrats would probably even be with you. I would be with you. I wanted the sons of bitches slaughtered. But no, instead of going after the people that were responsible, you went after someone that they might have known maybe. What a bunch of crap. Instead of going after Al-Qaeda, he went after Saddam, and there's no link. Everybody knows it. He made that shit up about the WMD to justify a fake war. Now he's in it. Hundreds of soldiers are dying. We can't get out. It's the biggest mess since Reagan's debacle 20 years ago in Lebanon.
So that was 1983. Now in 2003, Robert Baer investigated that bombing back in Beirut. He was a CIA field officer then. His latest book is called Sleeping with the Devil, How Washington Sold Our Soul for Saudi Crude. And Robert Baer is our guest now, halfway around the world in Abu Dhabi. And we welcome you here to American Morning, back with us on this program. If you look back to 1983, you recently wrote a piece in the Washington Post that indicates, in your estimation, that there were strong parallels with the UN bombing in Baghdad from several weeks ago. What parallels do you see?
Well, the main one is that I think that our adversaries there are trying to reproduce Beirut 1983 by launching attacks by car bombs, inflicting considerable damage, our inability to arrest the people. They're hoping to break the will of Washington and leave.
Do you believe the U.S. military, 20 years later, is better prepared for these events, like the UN bombing in Baghdad, reflecting back on what happened in Beirut?
Oh, absolutely. Today in Baghdad, you'll find these barriers around all our major facilities which prevent car bombs. You know, these 20 years, we've learned that our facilities are extremely vulnerable to suicide bombers. Until you put these cement barriers around them, we're going to always be at risk.
You know, some people believe right now Baghdad is a large barricaded city. For those who believe it was a victory for terrorists back in Beirut 20 years ago, what lesson do you think the U.S. learned from that? Essentially, 6 months after those attacks, the Marines were out of Lebanon.
Well, it was more than the Marines were just out. The Marines redeployed offshore. They left quietly. But what that happened after the Marine bombing was unchained a group that's now called Hezbollah, which proceeded to drive the Israelis out of Lebanon.
And let's not forget that Hezbollah was one of the groups, Islamic Jihad was another, that Reagan and Bush, I don't think Reagan knew very much, he was too stupid, but Bush was secretly doing all these deals with them. They did their original deal in 1980, the October surprise. Look for it on consortiumnews.com, all the facts. After they illegally used these terrorists to get arrested, I'm sorry, to get elected, Freudian slip, it laid there for a couple years, and then they decided they wanted to stop the hostage situation in Lebanon by dealing with these guys. So these idiot monkeys, like I say, everybody should know how to play pool. I'm sorry, everybody should know how to gamble at nine ball playing pool. Everybody should know how to play poker. When you get burned a couple times in poker, you learn your lesson. But these idiots, Bush and the BFEA, did not learn their lessons. What they did, and it's so incredibly stupid, they made a deal with the terrorists. Okay, if you let this guy go, we'll give you some arms and some weapons. And they said, oh, okay. So they let the guy go. They'd get their shipment, and then they grab another hostage. Idiots. And so here's Bush and the BFEE saying, well, hey, if you let that guy go, we'll give you some more planes and some weapons and some parts and some rocket launchers and, well, yeah, the Stinger missiles. Way to go, George. Given the terrorists Stinger missiles, you dumb nut. So again and again, that whole Iran-Contra thing that nobody likes to talk about because it makes Bush and Reagan look so guilty, but the whole arms for hostages thing, that's what it was about. Every time they let a hostage go, Bush and the BFEE would arm them, would arm the terrorists with futuristic weapons they couldn't buy anywhere else on the damn planet, and then they'd grab another hostage. And you remember that Higgins? Remember they hung him, sent that videotape to Washington, D.C., and they said, oh, it's so awful. Why don't we give these bastards some more Stinger missiles? Maybe they'll be nice to us then. Maybe they'll stop grabbing hostages. So they gave them more missiles, and then they grabbed more hostages. Idiots, what is wrong with the BFEE that they can't fucking do the math?
Well, it was more than the Marines were just out. The Marines redeployed offshore. They left quietly. But what that happened after the Marine bombing was unchained a group that's now called Hezbollah, which proceeded to drive the Israelis out of Lebanon. This now has become a template for Islamic militants. They hope to do the same thing in Iraq. And you got to remember that this war in Lebanon was a clear-cut victory for Islamic, at least the militant version of it.
You know, it's pretty rare that you hear the truth on a network like CNN, but this guy is exactly right. Reagan's screw-up created the template that created 9-1-1 and this bullshit that we're going through now in Iraq. Reagan proved to him that America would turn tail and run after you kicked a bunch of ass. Of course, Clinton didn't have this problem because he never put any men into harm's way. The Somalia massacre was Bush's fault, just like his idiot son did 10 years later. Bush sent those men to Somalia without the proper armor. We got these guys in Iraq now. They're having to take AK-47 off of dead Iraqi soldiers, and they're making do with whatever Kevlar vest. I heard a guy on yesterday, I don't know if it was radio or TV, but a guy said, some old guy, like 50, in America was saying, his son wrote and said, Dad, I don't have any armor. So the father went to the police equipment shop, bought his son a Kevlar, whatever, bullet-resistant vest, and shipped it to him so he wouldn't die in Iraq. Now, where the hell is the government? We're borrowing $1 trillion to give away to big business, and we can't afford to put Kevlar on the boys who are over there taking bullets for that son of a bitch, Bush. What the hell is wrong with people? But, oh, back to the point. Reagan's template is what's causing Bush's problems today. Democrats don't have these problems. This is a Republican screw-up from top to bottom, but talk radio and the networks are not going to let you realize that. They don't want you to know that. All they want you to do is concentrate on Clinton's cock while Bush and his gang of thugs go around the world raping and killing. This is a crime, and nobody calls him on it.
No, no one was ever punished for that bombing. This was a victory. The Israelis, the first time they've ever been defeated on the field of battle, the first time the Americans have ever really been defeated in the Middle East, a military victory. And so people are looking at this now and hoping to reproduce it in Iraq.
Robert Baer, thanks. Former CIA field officer in Beirut.
So you heard what the CIA field officer said. This was a victory for the terrorists that were dealing with Reagan and Bush, and they were never punished for their crimes. The partners of the BFEE murdered 240 of our Marines and were never punished. But, oh, let's talk about Somalia again. Bush's screw up that killed 18 gets all the attention, but Reagan and Bush screwing up, killing 240 Marines by dealing with the terrorists, by arming the terrorists. We never talk about that because the press and talk radio and the networks are all behind it to get their stinking little tax cut. They want to talk about that 18 so you don't dare elect a Democrat again. And they don't want to talk about the 240 dead Marines that set the template that America was a cowardly nation that'll run as soon as you inflict some damage. This is what Reagan and Bush have given us, and the press are protecting them, and the Democrats are shitting in their pants trying to figure out a way to stop trembling, and it pisses me off. Sometimes the blues makes you feel a little better. George Carlin was on Jay Leno a week or so ago, and following George Carlin was Chris the Screamer. So Carlin came out, did his bit. I didn't think he was particularly inspiring. Matter of fact, he seemed very old. It's strange because just a year ago or less, I've seen him when he was just on fire. But when he was on Leno, he was doing one of those, isn't it funny how this and that, and he just didn't do a whole lot to impress. But after he sat down, Chris the Screamer came out, Tweedy, as some of you know him, and he went into his usual how great Bush is, how great Arnold is, how fantastic and lucky California was to have someone of the greatness of Arnold that would save them from the liberal spending that caused all that. He just went on and on, and Carlin got in a great shot. The timing was as good as you'll ever see. And it's hard to do live interruption timing on TV because, you know, you can't count on the other guy to let you in. But here's George Carlin sticking it to Tweedy Matthews and Arnold.
And he came out there and ran a smart campaign. First of all, he didn't listen to the media. The media said go out there and debate every night for 5 weeks. He would have ended up being just like everybody else.
Let me ask you this. Do you think Arnold could have won if there had been a Republican primary?
No, he would have been beaten by a right-winger, and then the right-winger would have lost in the general. That's what's wrong with the system out here.
Yeah.
But, you know, he had something great. I was out there going to Modesto and Fresno and San Diego and all these places, watching his big buses come in, and they had the confetti cannon that shoots the confetti, and they're all this phony stuff, this hoopla, which is all funny. But one thing was real. At the end of one of his stops, one of his rallies, a young kid, I'd say the kid was around 12, a boy, and as the bus was about to leave and the state troopers were keeping everybody away from the bus, this kid naughtily went up and just touched the bus. And then walked back to his family. For that kid, this is the one time in his life he could touch celebrity. You know, a guy who's going to be governor, a big movie star, an action hero. I think that magic is real.
They didn't back over the kid or anything.
No, they didn't.
I'd like to remind everybody that for the best in internet silversmithing, go to mickrasley-silver.com. That's mickrasley-silver.com. If Mick can't do it, it can't be done. You saw what he did with that Chinoco belt buckle, and you've seen a couple more examples on the page. Give old Mick a call, or give him a click, and see if he can't fix you right up. Thank you, Mick, our only advertiser.
Sean P. Diddy Combs announced Tuesday that he will compete in the New York Marathon in hopes of raising $1 million for educational charities. Combs does not expect to make good time in the race because it's very hard to run fast with Ashton Kutcher up his ass the whole time.
As of yesterday, the Bush administration said they still hadn't found the source of the White House leak that outed a woman as a CIA operative. So just to recap, here are the things President Bush can't find. The White House leak, weapons of mass destruction in Iraq, Saddam Hussein, Osama bin Laden, a link between Saddam Hussein and Osama bin Laden, the guy who sent the anthrax through the mail, and his own butt with two hands and a flashlight.
He ain't smart. He's just Bart. Barkov.com.
Just a little bit of sports because I know how much you hate the sports. Today is Wednesday something, maybe 29th, just before Halloween. I'll tell you who put the big goblin on us the last 2 years in Oklahoma football, of which you do not care. But Oklahoma started the season number one, the best football team in the nation, as of this vocalization. They are still number one, undefeated, but they're going into Stillwater to play the Oklahoma State Cowboys. Now, I don't like anything with Cowboys on it. I don't like anything with Cowboys on it. I don't hate OSU the way I hate the Dallas Cowboys or the Texas Cowboy in the White House, but I, compared to OU, I do not like the OSU Cowboys, but they're ranked, I think, in the teens, 17, 13, somewhere in there. And interesting, the last 2 years in a row, they have whipped Oklahoma's ass. Oklahoma does not like that. Bob Stoops is the coach there. And I saw a thing in the paper this week where they said, Bob, since Oklahoma State beat you the last 2 years in a row, and you've beat Texas the last 4 years in a row, has Oklahoma State become the new arch rival that you must beat? And he said, no, it's just a game. He lied. But the idea, I don't care if they give OSU 50 points. Take OU minus the points. They will not lose this game. I expect they'll be ahead 31-0 after the first quarter. Bet the house, bet the ranch, bet the jewels. Go all in on Oklahoma. They're going to destroy OSU this weekend. It's a matter of pride, and if they get past them, I don't know even who else they got to play. Maybe Nebraska, maybe something else. I think they have a, who knows, they jack with it every year. I think at the end of the year, they're going to play someone else for the Big Ten Championship or Big 12, wherever they are. Who cares? But anyway, this is a big, big game for them. It's this Saturday in 2-3 days. Bet Oklahoma, bet the house. Regular readers know I'm a bit of a fan of the show 24. Mrs. Bart really likes it, so I'm kind of stuck watching. But it is a good show, and what I like about it the best is how it's a Fox show that beats up on Republicans and the vulgar pig boy and the unelected weasel some call president. Now, last night, hell, I don't know, a couple nights ago, recently, they had the premiere at 24, and I was struck by how many times they brought up the stab-in-the-back Republican weasel bastards. I got one audio for you, and then two I'll tell you about. Here, let's do the first one. This is the first mention of the illegal usurper.
I'm ready, Adams, on the phone. I'm open, Adams. Send me the file.
No.
Michelle just told you.
I don't need anyone doing my work for me.
What is your problem?
My problem is that everyone in this place earned their job. You got it because of your dad.
Well, I think they were pretty clear. They were showing how awful it is when some unqualified idiot gets an important, sensitive job because of who his or her daddy was. Clearly a shot across the bow of the unelected usurper monkey boy. The second one, midway through the show, don't know if you saw it. This is a spoiler, so turn it off if you don't want to hear it. But the theme of this year's show, or the plot, they've got some infected cocaine. It looks, I don't know how much, a bunch of, it was a half a gallon of cocaine. And they paid some idiot boy, some, you know, teenager, 20-ish, they paid him $5,000 to go to Mexico to get the infected cocaine. And then they said they'd give him another $5,000 when he delivered it to some guy in L.A. So this guy, this little mule, he explains to his buddy, he said, hey, I'm going to make a quick $10,000 here. He doesn't know he's going to die. Yeah, of course the terrorists are going to pay you after you give them the infected cocaine. Of course they're going to keep their end of the deal because they're terrorists. So he tells his friend, dude, you want to make some quick money? You want to go with me to the drop? And he's going, no, I have no desire to die, you moron pinhead. But anyway, he said, why in the world would you do this? He said, dude, I'm going to make $10,000 for like a day's work, and I'm already here. I already got the cocaine. We're across the border. There's very little risk now. Of course, he doesn't know he's dealing with the terrorists who are going to murder 10% of America, no, 10% of L.A., in, I think, whatever, 48 hours, something like that. No, it's less than 24 hours. Whatever. They're going to kill a bunch of people quick. So he says, but dude, why in the world would you take a risk like this? And he said, well, the economy is so bad. My dad can't find work. We're about to get thrown out of this shitty, dingy, little crappy home that we rented, all because of the Bush boy and his idiotic tax cuts for the, he didn't say all this, but the idiotic tax cuts for the super rich that threw the whole world into recession just so he could disguise his emptying of the treasury as some kind of bogus recovery bill. So that's number two. Number three, oh, this is the big one, if you hadn't heard. The show starts out, Jack has just put a big, big-time drug dealer behind bars. And they don't want to get him for drug dealing. They want the big-time drug dealer to reveal his terrorist sources, because, you know, drugs equals terrorism, as you all know. If you grow a marijuana seed in your backyard, you have helped to blow up the World Trade Center, as the government has told us repeatedly. It's not oil and SUVs that finance terrorism. It's pot. Okay, so Jack has spent the last year or two, it's 3 years after the last show, so we don't know, but he spent the last recent time infiltrating this drug outfit. And apparently, Jack Dunn got himself hooked on heroin. Our hero, Jack, is a junkie, just like the vulgar pig boy. I could see it coming a mile away. He started twitching and itching stuff like 10 minutes into the show, and I'm going, he looks like a junkie. Miss Bart said, oh, please. So then as time went by, it got worse and worse, and so he started itching and, you know, climbing the walls and stuff. So he pulls out his secret compartment where he's got his heroin and his syringe and everything, and he's all, you know, he ties his arm off. It's not like I think this happened. He ties his arm off, and he's got the you know, the belt thing in his mouth, and he's beating on his vein trying to get it to pop up so he can stab himself with the heroin. And at the last second, his daughter, Cougar, his daughter, Kim, who has not yet been chased by the cougar, she calls him, Daddy, are you busy? Daddy, let's talk. Daddy, Daddy, Daddy. And, you know, he's trying to shoot up some heroin. He's got that whiny bitch just ragging after him. So anyway, he gets mad and he throws the syringe on the floor, which is really a bad move if you think about it. On the floor of the CTU, the counterterrorism director's floor, now he's got some liquid heroin and syringe and glass all over the place and needles. I mean, it's just, Jack, real smart move. If I was addicted to heroin, I would have put it back in the little case and hit it again. But no, Jack thought it would be a great idea to throw it against the wall or the computer or whatever so it would bust into little pieces, so the heroin and the syringe and the needles and the broken glass would be all over his little office there for the next person to walk in to discover. Good thinking, Jack. But anyway, in closing, applause, applause. Last night's 24 was about how bad the economy got, how poor Jack had to turn into the vulgar junkie, and some people get a job because of their daddy, not because they're qualified. Kim the idiot is running computers now for the terrorism unit in Los Angeles. Kim the idiot, who, like Bush, can't be trusted to run the fry machine at McDonald's, and they got her running the computers at the terrorism office. Good thinking. But hey, you got to love 24, the way they poke fun at Bush and the Republicans and the vulgar junkie. Yeah, I'm in the custard. Dripping from the deep down side. Crawling like a fish, my pornography priestess. Boy, you've been a naughty girl, you let your knickers down. I am the Eggman. They are the Eggmen. I am the walrus. Look at you. Rain.
Just taking on a sense of humor for a moment, can you give us a sense of what it was like when you would write a joke, or how he would see that something was funny or perhaps wasn't funny?
Well, see, Bob would always tell us if he thought something wasn't funny, but generally, you know, he would improvise whatever we wrote for him and make it funny.
So in other words, if we wrote something that wasn't funny, he would turn it around and make it funny.
So he was a pretty he was a pretty great guy to work for then if you're a comedy writer. It makes you look good.
He was the best. He was the best boss one could ever have. And from what I understand, he died choking on Howard Stern's ball sack.
No. Okay. Well, we're going to have to go ahead and take him off the air. Amazing that even at times like this, that when the country is trying to mourn a great entertainer, that people try to pick a very inappropriate time to try to be funny. So we'll just move on with that.
Well, now, granted, that wasn't very nice. Poor old Bob Hope, $400 million, died at the age of 100. And here, some friend of Howard Stern's or some fan got on the TV and made an inappropriate joke. But doesn't it say more about CNN that they would put some unqualified monkey on the air to speak about what it's like to work for Bob Hope for all these years? Yes, I think it was wrong for the Stern guy to do that. But where the hell is CNN? Do you remember I've talked about this before? But while O.J. had the gun to his head in the white Bronco, one of Stern's, I don't know if it's Captain Jenks or I don't know exactly who all those people are, but he called ABC, got on the air live with that idiot Peter Jennings, who's just slightly more stupid than a block of wood, and he's doing his step and fetch it voice. He's doing step and fetch it voice, which is he was a Negro comic from maybe the 30s. We'll always be talking like this here. I mean, you know, when Chris Rock does his dumb Negro, that's who he's doing, step and fetch it. So anyway, this guy calls and says he's O.J.'s neighbor in Brentwood, where they have the million-dollar house. And he said, I be seeing O.J. O.J. be having a gun to his head. You know, he's our style like that. And Peter Jennings, the moron block of wood, he's got this guy live on ABC, which is a major network in America. And here's CNN, 5 years, 10 years later, doing the same thing. Who is the other guy? Oh, I'm sorry, it was the same Howard Stern from O.J. when he called and said, this is so-and-so, the producer of the LA Office. I got a guy live on the scene. Give me Jennings right now. And it's the same way, who the hell are you, and why should we be putting you on the air? They said, oh, okay. And they ran this guy right to Jennings, right on the air, which is how these people get fooled. Because CNN, ABC, when you people don't do your jobs, you put any dick in the world on your channel there, you put them on live, and then you get all upset when you get tricked. Well, hey, why don't you do your effing homework? If you do your homework and then you get tricked, well, then maybe bad on that guy. But it's bad on you if you allow these ruffians, these ne'er-do-wells, to come in and speak poorly about Howard Stern's ball sack being the cause of death for Bob Hope. That's on CNN. That's not on the prankster. It's about time CNN, ABC, and everybody else, why don't you do your damn homework? Why don't you act like professionals? Why don't you do your effing jobs? I saw in the paper last week, it didn't get much press. Headline, little tiny paragraph in the world's greatest newspaper, USA Today, cough, cough. Bush visits Hawaii en route home. President Bush capped a week-long six-nation Pacific trip with a final stop in Hawaii. He honored Americans killed in the Japanese attack on Pearl Harbor in 1941 and told about 60 World War II and Korean War veterans that they set a great example for future soldiers and sailors. Before heading back to Washington, the president attended fundraisers. Well, that goes without saying for the fundraisers. But it struck me as funny. Did it strike you as funny? It struck me as funny that this idiot, this draft-dodging, AWOL, deserting man, I use the word loosely, would go to the Pearl Harbor Memorial and mention a word. Can you believe they let this donkey talk? Mr. Preemptive Strike. Mr. We got to kill them on the off chance that they may someday think about killing us. Went to the Pearl Harbor Memorial and gave a speech. The irony. It's just amazing. Granted, we didn't pull a sneak attack on Iraq, but we attacked them with no declaration of war for no goddamn reason. We just said we're going to do it, and we did it. And now we're stuck there, and there's no reason. And the idiot goes to the Pearl Harbor Memorial to explain it. It's hard to be a comedy writer in times like this because the truth is so stupid and ridiculous. What the hell are you going to make fun of?
Madonna has agreed to star in as a kinky leather-clad dominatrix in Britney Spears' new music video. This should be really hot for anyone who finds sad desperation hot.
Yes. According to a new study, women in satisfying marriages are less likely to develop cardiovascular diseases than unmarried women. So don't worry, lonely women. You'll be dead soon. Billy Joel shattered his wrist this week after falling down the stairs while inspecting renovations at his Long Island home. The fall has left Joel no choice but to fire his contractors, James Beam and Glenn Fittick.
Well, that pretty much is show 17 so far. Might have a 17B, Michael Wright 18. You know, we are free to do as we want. We can do show 17 part 42 if we want, but by then it would bear no semblance to the beginning. So what the hell, we're going to close off with a little Shirley. You music haters can kill it now. Sorry I put you through a few minutes of music earlier in this show, but you know, sometimes when you're at the point of outrage and you want to, when you think about shooting something, put on a little blues, put on a little Shirley, maybe some Led, maybe some U2, maybe some Floyd, kind of kick back, let the clouds go by. It's therapeutic. That's how we can keep coming day after day. 5 years from now, 10 years from now, we'll still be here when all the other people have got burned out and gone home. So here's a little Shirley for you. Thanks for listening. Bar Cop Radio, show 17. See you again soon.
You walked into the room, the sun hit my eyes. The thought you struck me down, caught me by surprise.